wrapping the kids out of their coats, the way the babies haven't been born.
Welcome to Teacher Besties, a podcast for teachers. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Kelly. On this week's agenda, we'll check in with what we've done this week. We'll talk about how we handled college application season. And we will discuss the benefits of teaching mindfulness in the classroom.
It may be years until the day my dreams will match up with my pain.
How was your week?
My week was okay. It was my first week back from a break, which, you know, always be a challenge. I kind of thought, Man, I really wish I could just be independently wealthy for several days this week. But I made it, which is great. And next week is homecoming, which is always fun to do on campus. I'm judging homecoming skits, so I think I'm going to be excited.
Oh, that's fun.
I've never done that before.
What is required of you?
I was told that I had to go and sit outside and watch, and that lunch would be provided. And then I said, that's really great, but I don't need lunch, which I think I kind of made the kid feel bad for a sec. But, you know, I'm all about packing my own lunch. So I get to judge people, which I'm very good at, and hopefully be entertained.
That sounds fun. Our homecoming was this last week. And I had one of those moments as a new teacher on campus where I realized, like, sometimes students don't, the same way we don't realize what's going on in their day-to-day life of, like, you know, homecoming was probably the most important thing to some of those kids that week. I was also thinking about how they don't realize how we sometimes don't see it as so important.
Yeah. My high school, I don't honestly remember, like, if growing up we had homecoming, so I don't think I did. I know there was no dance for sure because we only had junior and senior prom.
Oh, gosh.
And so, I mean, like, I didn't really, like, I wasn't the big fan of dancing in public at the time, so I'm totally fine with that. But the whole, like, I'm going to basically ask propose somebody to homecoming is just very, it tickles me. I see all the kids on campus, and I'm just like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah, that did not happen when I was in high school. That is a product of Laguna Beach / The Hills because they made it popular on TV. And then basically ever since then, it's been a thing. But homecoming was a big deal at my school. We built floats all week. It was really fun because, like, you know, basically all night, like every night after school until like midnight, you were at somebody's house or on campus building a float with all of your friends. And I have very good memories.
That's awesome. Of doing this. What were they made out of?
Many of my friends. A lot of like paper mache and like chicken wire stuffed with things so that like if you do it with enough, like if you do it enough to where it's all filled out, it actually starts to look like a form.
That's really neat.
Are not always aware of what they're up to.
Yeah. Does your school or does your new school do dress up days? Is that still part of homecoming? Oh yeah.
Yes. Same thing. They have, you know, lots of dress up. Although I would say I didn't see as many kids dressed up this year. I think the easier the theme, the more chance you're going to get a lot of kids to do it. So there were a lot of kids on like the patriotic day because red, white, and blue is pretty easy to do, but there were not very many kids dressed up on some of the more specific theme days.
Yeah. Tomorrow is NASA Nerd Monday, and I have this really epic NASA sweatshirt, but I also have a meeting after school, so I think professionalism is going to win out. And I will not be dressing up.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, let's be serious.
What else did you do this week?
I spent a lot of time over break trying to figure out how to, like, the AP class I teach is it's very student-driven. Like, they're supposed to do a lot of research second semester, so first semester is all about figuring out how to scaffold them successfully doing that. And so I was really proud that I made a rotating chart of students on a calendar, which they have access to, and they can see when they have to submit their article to me, and then I print out a hard copy for the class and then their discussion leaders. So I was feeling proud and organized.
Cool. That's really good. Yeah, organization is key to like I think getting student-centered work done. I always marveled at the speech and debate teacher at our former school and how good she was at getting kids to basically lead that class. And that was all about organization, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And so tomorrow's the first day of somebody actually stepping up and leading a discussion. So I'm going to see how well she does. I picked a good first person. I think it's going to be great.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm kind of in like, I've said this for the last few weeks, but I'm just in like the October slump, I think. I did not have a week off. I'm trying to re-inspire myself. I think I had like earlier today, I was having one of those moments of like, it's Sunday night. I'm totally overwhelmed. I have to plan 15 hours of instruction. Like part of my frustration, I think, is feeling like I should not still be planning all of these things. Like I'm in my sixth year. I shouldn't be reinventing the wheel. But I think so many times we end up doing that, no matter how many years we've been teaching. There's just things that we haven't gotten right yet.
Yeah, there's definitely twerking. And so obviously going to a new school, you have to just twerk a little more to fit your clientele.
Different kind of twerking than I think I'm usually thinking about.
I didn't even think about that. Tweak. Is that the word I want?
I think you mean tweak.
Oh, my God.
Twerking is not something I regularly do in class. But, tweaking. I'm just feeling like I'm doing so much more this year, and I think I have to give my former colleagues a lot of credit for how much work we put into aligning our courses. So, when I say alignment, I mean like deciding which grade, like which English teachers teach what in which grade level, so that when they come to you, say in 11th grade English, you know that they also got this in 10th grade, and then the year before that they got whatever other skills. And I think that my new department really values teacher autonomy, and I think that's awesome, and I love the freedom that I've gotten back, but I also sort of miss some of the structure because, you know, I really like knowing that I'm teaching towards a goal, and so I'm just trying to discover that again for myself, I guess.
I can understand that. I mean, we talked about this the other day, and that I teach a lot of freshman classes, and so it's challenging for me because they all come from different middle schools to know what skill set they have. And yeah. It's challenging for you, one, not being at the school last year, and two, not having as much, what's the word?
Like, I haven't figured out really how to collaborate with my department a lot.
Do you see that collaboration happens across the board?
I think it happens. I think that I'm making a judgment both as an experienced teacher, but being inexperienced at a new school. And so, like, that sort of, like, those things converging can be a little frustrating.
Yeah. And I think with time, though, it'll settle down and you'll find out who your people are and you'll be able to spend time collaborating with them.
Yeah, I agree. I also think I'm just going to become, like, the subject matter expert on alignment and, you know, kind of push for, like, what can we do to align our courses, not take away teacher autonomy, because I'm totally not, you know, in that camp, but just to say, like, these are the 10 skills every 10th grader should leave English class with and, like, make a commitment to teach those.
Yeah. I mean, you know that not all – so I have a really good group of people. There's four of us that teach the same freshman class, and we all work together really well. But the other classes I've taught previous years, like, that level of collaboration didn't exist.
Yeah. But I think the thing is that with history, no matter what year you're teaching, like, the skills might be – similar, but the content information is like always going to be very different. Whereas in English, like, you know, when you have a lot of freedom, sometimes you can decide to teach something that a third of your class has already learned, and then two thirds of your class does not have it. And so making that distinction between, like, am I going to spend a lot of time talking about symbolism when a lot of my kids know what it is, and then other kids have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
you know?
That's really frustrating. We definitely, as a department, I think it was 2 years ago now, sat down and tried to do vertical alignment, and I feel like about half of us actually implement what we have done, and I'd be curious to see how to get other people to follow through more, but yeah. I do. And I feel good about it.
I would say one reason why I really like teaching the AP curriculum is because I know exactly the skills that they need to know at the end of the year, but you are still, like, you still have that freedom to get to that endpoint the way that you think is going to best suit your students. That's, to me, is like the perfect balance of, you know, teacher freedom, but structure.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of teach a loosey-goosey AP class, so.
Yeah. Well, it's new. Yeah. It's forming. What is it called again? AP?
Capstone. Oh, it's a two-year program. I'm teaching the seminar portion this year.
Okay.
And then next year is research.
I would really like to hear from anybody, if anyone's listening that also teaches that class, what they're doing.
Oh, I obviously would like that a lot. anyway, so let's be positive, and the next 2 weeks we're going to work out of our slump and...
Yeah, I'm already kind of feeling, I'm feeling like an upturn. I have my evaluation, my first evaluation at this new school this week. So I'm a little, have the natural nerves, but I'm very confident about how it's going to go. Well, and then
I'll wish you luck, but I don't think you need it.
Thank you. But I'm starting to feel like I know a little bit more of what I want to do with these students as I'm getting to know them better. So
that sounds perfect.
Things are looking good.
Let's talk about college applications.
Oh my gosh, I've been doing so much with the seniors with college apps, but it helps that I'm teaching an English class where teaching the personal statement is a big part of it.
Yeah. So I guess whenever kids ask me for advice, I give them advice that my mom forced on me when I was in high school. And so my mom is like, she finally started listening. Hi, Mom. And so when she hears this in like 6 weeks, because she's behind, she'll smile. She made a personal mom deadline for all of my college applications. I didn't have a choice. So if I wanted to apply to a school, it had to be done by November 1st. And if it wasn't, then I could not apply there. So that is my first piece of advice. One of the best things my mom has ever done for me. It made for a really, really low stress senior year.
Nice.
But then I guess we could talk about it from a teacher perspective, too.
Yeah. The first thing I would say for teachers is only write letters of recommendation for students who you think you're going to enjoy writing those letters for and who you, like, genuinely want to write them for. I have found that when I've accepted students out of obligation or because I felt bad for them, that it showed in their letter, and I was not that enthusiastic, and it probably wasn't the greatest letter of rec.
I absolutely agree, 100%.
And I would say, like, the positive thing to do would be to instead direct that kid to another adult advocate. Or, like, one time I actually had a kid sit down and write a list of teachers who he thought he had, like, a positive, like, showed a positive something about themselves in that class. And and then I helped him, like, go and ask those teachers for letters of rec. I've also had students who... Sadly, I've had to have them reflect on why they don't have a single teacher at their high school out of, 28 teachers that have taught them throughout the course of their high school education who will write them one. And then they start kind of reflecting and realizing, you know, maybe I didn't really put my best foot forward in any classes. And it's not that I want to discourage them from applying to colleges, but having that, like, self-reflection of who are you really demonstrating to these teachers and why do you want to go to these schools and do you think that you're ready for that? Like, I think that was pretty beneficial for some students as well.
Something that I don't do, which I think next year I would like to implement, because this year I'm writing a whopping 15 letters.
Oh my God.
Let me explain. So this year's senior class, I've always taught freshmen, but I've also taught like a mix of other stuff. So I vacillate between teaching juniors and seniors.
Yeah.
So the graduating class, I had them as freshmen, and then I also taught juniors last year, and I had a lot of repeat kids.
Yeah.
And so they're students that 100% I felt very comfortable writing letters for.
Right.
And then I looked at my list, and all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, I have 15. Anyway, I did tell a few kids no,
mm-hmm.
because I couldn't take anymore. Also because I only had them as freshmen, and I was like, oh,
right,
you need to find someone else. But another teacher at my school has students write their own letter. And I think I'm going to try to do that next year.
Yeah, I mean, at least it gives you an outline and then you tweak it, right?
Yeah. Well, I would never submit a letter that someone just handed to me. I obviously would change it up. But I'd be curious to see what they focused on as what's best for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to be clear, like, I know that teacher too and how she does it. And she gives them, like, a pretty clear outline and instructions on how what they should have in the first paragraph, second paragraph, third paragraph, and then she obviously cleans it up. But I think it saves her time. And when you're teaching, like you said, class, like when you're teaching a lot of APs or when you teach juniors every year, you know, you get hit with them, and you sometimes you do want to tell those kids yes because they don't have anyone else to ask if everybody that they had junior year says I already have 15. But it's hard to handle the load of all of those. Like,
it is. That's what I've been working on. So I have I have them in order of when the letters are due. Mm-hmm. And so I have one that's due on Wednesday. Just kidding. Thursday the 15th. And he's almost done. So I'm feeling pretty good.
That's good. I'm only writing one this year because of my transfer to another school.
I know. Lucky you.
But the one that I'm writing is for, like, my all-time best favorite student ever, meaning like I had a really strong relationship with that student, and so I'm very, very excited to work on that one. Yeah. And it actually re-energizes me when I'm writing the ones for students that I really enjoyed having, because it reminds me of like where we're going, and it can help me get out of that October slump. So I think it's it's a good thing.
It is. How many have we each said? Two?
No, I've only said the one thing. So my other thing is, when I'm teaching the personal statement, I like to show them a lot of essays that worked. And you can literally type into Google essays that worked, and it links to the college essays at various colleges that worked. So I would say do that. I also show them an essay that, a colleague of ours called the Terrible Lacrosse Essay. And it's basically, you know, first I tried out for the team, and then I worked at practice, and then I did this, and then I did that, and then I became captain, and it is the most boring, like, list of facts. And we sort of just rip it apart and talk about why it's boring and why it doesn't show anything about you. And then we focus on basically telling a story, not giving a resume.
Yeah, because that's what you fill out the other questions for.
Right, and then a big thing that students don't ever want to show is they don't ever want to show their failures, but most of the colleges want to see that they failed at something and then that they had the, you know, tenacity and, like, drive to stick with it and show some growth. So they actually do want to see something in your essay that you, like, failed at, but then rose above.
Overcame.
Right.
When I taught English that one year, I actually still have my college essay, and I read mine to the class.
Oh, wow.
I wouldn't let them tear it apart or have it in writing because I was too embarrassed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. It was about having red hair.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I also have students that, you know, because we teach a lot of privileged kids, that give me that, like, have anything to write about, my life's been too easy, and I'm like, all right, let's laugh at you for that for 5 minutes, and then we'll move on. And, you know, I usually sarcastically tell them, lucky for you, the school that you're going to is full of privileged kids that never had anything bad happen to them.
Oh.
Yeah. And then they quickly realize they should get over themselves and figure out something that they can write about. So
it's too funny.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a third thing. I guess maybe just being organized. Like, figuring out if you're a student, which teachers explicitly you need to ask, and how to ask them like a mature adult, not just shoving a packet of information in their face.
Good point.
Asking ahead of time. And then if you're a teacher who's overwhelmed like me right now with letters, finding one extra special thing about the student that they didn't write in their packet that makes you smile about how they behaved in your class.
Mm-hmm.
Like the letter I'm writing now, I literally have a little description of this kid who brings the same pen to class every single day. And you know it's the same pen because it's like a weird non-traditional one. And like what that means about a kid, because clearly if I've had him for 2 years and he's showing up with the same pen, it's like, man, you're just awesome.
Yeah. Sometimes we get the parents to write a questionnaire about the student, and I actually love reading those
because I love those too.
The perspective from the parent side is so different, and sometimes I've found out things about my students that they've done over the years that I had no idea, like, you know, that their student cooks dinner for them every night so they can work late, or like things like that that I think are amazing.
Yeah. I definitely agree. Some of the parents are just, they're so sweet. Like, I meet them on back to school night and probably not again, and I have this usually very serious picture in my mind, and then I read their parent questionnaire and I'm like, oh, you're so cute.
The last thing I'm going to recommend is a new thing. It's a podcast called Getting In. And I've actually recommended it for students and parents and teachers. It sort of encompasses all audiences. It's put on by that woman, Julie Lithcott-Haynes, that wrote the book How to Raise an Adult that we talked about in our first episode.
Yeah.
And she basically puts out a podcast every week that's like 15 to 20 minutes, and she breaks down things from whether or not letters of rec are important or necessary on your application. She answered whether or not A's are better in regular classes than B's in AP. She answered, there was another really good question.
Is it only from the Stanford perspective? Like, no.
She actually doesn't answer the questions. She gets experts from like across the country, various admissions committees. And a lot of parents and students and teachers are writing in, and they'll ask the questions. I had my seniors listen to one of the episodes, and they thought it was pretty helpful. And even though they're kind of inundated with the information right now, I think sometimes they just like hearing that they're not the only ones wondering that same thing.
No, that sounds really great. I looked for it the other day, but it was on my phone, and I guess I'm not as savvy as I think I am sometimes, because a lot of things came up, not just that one.
Well, you use one of those weird non-Apple phones, so I don't even know how to help you.
That's okay. I'm going to do it on the computer.
Yeah.
My Apple computer.
Yeah. Feel free to send us money, Apple, if you would like. Since we just said that we're recording this on GarageBand, a wonderful program.
Also using FaceTime.
Speaking of that, a small little thing of what I'm doing this week, I'm going to be teaching for 3 hours this week a workshop on how to do a podcast to kids at my school.
I'm so excited for you. Is that on Wednesday?
Yeah. So the kids that don't take the PSAT at my school get the opportunity to take workshops from their teachers in a variety of things, a lot of really cool things. And I decided, hey, why not? I'll just tell them the few things I know about podcasting, and we'll see how it goes. I'm kind of nervous, but hopefully
I think it's gonna be great.
I'm hoping to just get kids that like genuinely are interested but don't really know much, because otherwise I'm gonna be like, I don't know much either, kids. I'm just figuring it out.
I mean, worst case scenario, get a video.
Yeah,
like a tutorial video.
Yeah, no, I think I'm just gonna break down like 10 things that they need to know, and because I think before you know it, it's gonna go by really fast. I mean, a few hours, absolutely. It's not much to teach somebody how to podcast, so.
No, I totally agree. It's going to be good. And then you can have, like, they could make a cute little one. Yeah, are they going to have computers?
They're going to have Apple computers with GarageBand.
You're killing me.
I know. They're going to have all the equipment. But we'll see if they have a quiet enough space to record. I'm also, I think, going to record some sample audio for them to just, like, play with laying the tracks over and stuff.
Yeah.
And just like kind of show them the basics of cutting things together and putting the sound effects in and stuff.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. And yeah, let me know how that goes.
Yeah, I'll definitely report back.
Teaching mindfulness.
All right. This is from the Washington Post, right?
It is. And it's a company called, or a program called Minds. And they have programs in classrooms, also programs for parents. And there's one particular school in Washington State where they have a mindfulness class every day. And mm-hmm. there's a teacher, and she has a funny title. Peace teacher. Her title is a peace teacher. Nice. And she teaches, or she's in charge of all the 500 kids in the school, and they have classes aimed at enhancing self-awareness and reducing stress. Mm-hmm. And so the article goes on to talk a lot about how stressed out students are and how well these techniques really work, as opposed to, they make a reference to Seinfeld, yeah. where George's dad yells
serenity now.
Yeah. And how being mindful of your space and the people around you and thinking things through rather than having a panic really work to help. And they go through some techniques in the article, one of which was really cute. It was there was a guy, an adult, walking around blowing bubbles from a bubble wand. And so at first he let all the kids pop it. And then during a second lap of the room, think like follow the leader style, yeah. he was blowing bubbles again. And he forced the kids to just watch the bubbles pop on their own without touching.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, my me too. Favorite. I don't know if that would work for adults, but
okay. Here was my favorite one: was a teacher led a handful of sixth grade boys in a visualization exercise, and she asked them, she asked them to picture a room painted their favorite color, and then fill that room with people who make them feel safe. And one boy said, you know, as you would expect.
Chipotle people.
No, wait.
The Chipotle
one
people.
One boy said he imagined his dad. The other one said the staff at Chipotle.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's amazing. But, I mean, in all seriousness, I think that this could help every demographic. Like, every kid, right? I mean, we're yeah. constantly talking about how at the high-achieving, you know, affluent schools that the kids are stressed out about testing and about colleges, and this has led them to, you know, in some really extreme cases, suicide, in some other cases, like not coming to school, or at my school, calling in bomb threats. And I just think, like, why have we not gone to this? And then in the lower performing schools that our students are living in poverty, like teaching them how to deal with these, like with those situations where they could actually tap into some meditation or something at home. Like, hello, yeah. How wonderful would that be?
So at first I was reading it and I was like, this is a load of malarkey. But then when I got to the end, I definitely had a 180. I felt like, you know, this potentially could work just because I think it's, some of them are silly. I think having those moments where yeah. you can collect yourself again,
I used to do really some important. Of these things with my AP class a few years ago, and I would, like, you know, there were moments where they were really stressed out and I could tell, and I would just stop them and I would have them do like breathing exercises and stuff. And at first I think they thought I was like a crazy, crunchy hippie teacher, which like I am a little bit, but then after a while they really wanted it, like they needed it, and they were the least stressed out AP kids I ever saw. So,
all right, well, maybe. Yeah, maybe that's something to try.
Also, I would have to say that I think, sadly, some of the reasons why we don't see the higher performing schools grabbing onto this as something they need to do is just simply that, like, it doesn't show up on tests, you know? Like, there's no quote-unquote data
yeah.
to support it. And so, sadly, some of these things get pushed aside in favor of things that you can have quantitative data on. Which I think is really sucks.
True, but even this, the article on the first page talks about how the movement has spread from Fortune 500 companies and to the military mm-hmm. and athletics. So I feel like that should be could be reason enough to incorporate it
yeah.
into
well,
public
guess
education.
What? I'm going to send this article to some people at my school that like have some power.
That's funny because when I printed out a hard copy for myself because I'm old school like that. I'm going to stick it in my principal's mailbox. Yeah, I'm going to send it to my principal,
mostly because I think, like, I want to hear some actual solutions on these things, and I want to work towards them. I don't want to just want to gripe about them, but I want to see these things implemented in the classroom.
Yeah, me too. I think that this would actually be a teacher or a development training too. I would enjoy. Go meditate for 3 hours.
Oh, also, I shared this with my mom, who is, you know, if you think I'm a crunchy hippie, like, she's, like, way worse. she reads my son a book called Peaceful Piggy. And it's a children's book that teaches them how to, like, be peaceful with themselves and to meditate. And, like, it talks about how, you know, like, sometimes there are things that are out of your control, and sometimes there are people that really anger you, and that it just means you need to treat them with more kindness.
Oh, I feel like I could really use that book read to me. I use it all
the time. Like, sometimes I need to be reminded of it, and I think that would be a great book to, you know, start with maybe kindergarten. Yeah, Peaceful Piggy. Awesome. Look it up on Amazon.
I will definitely do that later. Wow, we're just really promoting a lot Amazon, of stuff Apple. Today.
I love all of the big corporations.
So, okay, we let's need to say plug. Goodbye.
We have a new stream, and things got a little strange, and we figured it out. We had to leave SoundCloud. Unfortunately, we won't be plugging SoundCloud today, because SoundCloud costs a little too much when you're putting a podcast on it. So we switched to what?
It's called Podomatic, but you can just search for us on iTunes. We're on there. But you have to search for Teacher Besties Podcast.
Because we had to switch the feed.
And
okay.
Or you can obviously go look us up on the same Tumblr we've been using, which is teacherbestiespodcast.tumblr.com.
Yeah, you can send us an email at teacherbesties@gmail.com. And
or if you know us, you can just say hi, because we like to hear from people
sure
who actually
that you're
listen.
Also, like, you know, posting it on Facebook and or reposting what I post so that it spreads around to other teachers. And that's all for us. Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
All right, you too. Bye.
Have a great week.